live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
If you like the Young Turks podcast, I think you'll love a lot of the podcasts on the TYT network. Old School, it's one of my favorites, one of the favorites for a lot of the listeners. Please check that out, subscribe, share it. That makes a big difference, and give it a 5-star rating. Thank you.
Hey everybody, welcome to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian. Cenk Uygur is out, but that's okay. In fact, it might even be a better show because we have two people that I love, Francesca Fiorentini.
Hi.
And J.R. Jackson.
I am the danger. Mm. It was a Cenk line yesterday.
I am the danger? That was the line that he?
How like, did he use it?
If anybody watched closely yesterday, it was the Muslim woman who threw up the deuces in front of those a-holes. And then Cenk was worried, you know, sometimes if you're in a dangerous situation, these guys could be dangerous. And he goes, but it doesn't happen to me because I am the danger.
Oh God, okay.
Cenk throwing up deuces.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
All right, well, good.
I just finished the Mueller report. My eyes are, I have to have reconstructive surgery on them. LASIK mostly, so I don't know. It's a lot of reading.
Yeah.
It's a lot of reading.
It's a lot of pages.
Yeah, I need bifocals.
You could have just worn the rose-colored glasses that all the Republicans wore when they read it.
Mm-hmm.
True. I was actually secretly hoping it was more redacted so I didn't have to do that much reading. But, you know, I guess transparency is important.
Right, and also at the end of the day, it appears nothing matters in that report.
Oh, of course. Yeah. We're not gonna actually do anything with it. We're just gonna read it.
Well, we have some stories that certainly do matter. Lots of big news today, including a new announcement for the presidential campaign. And later on, we are going to discuss the popularity of the Green New Deal, even in polling that's framed in a way to make the outcome appear that it's not popular. It's one of my favorite stories. And then later on, hopefully if we have time, we're gonna discuss how business is really conducted at Amazon warehouses. Mm. Insane. All right, but with that said, let's get started with the 2020 election. After months of speculation, Joe Biden, the former VP, has decided to announce that he is running. He has put his name in the hat and he is doing so by releasing a video. So his video specifically targets Donald Trump. And I want to talk about that strategy after we watch. So let's take a look.
I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are. And I cannot stand by and watch that happen. The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America, America is at stake. That's why today I'm announcing my candidacy for President of the United States. Folks, America's an idea that's stronger than any army, bigger than any ocean, more powerful than any dictator or tyrant. We have to remember who we are. This is America.
There's a line in his announcement video where he says, but if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are, and I cannot stand by and watch that happen. So that was the line that really stood out to me, because while I applaud the positivity about America, it's not the reality of America. And I think that Trump didn't really change the character of some Americans. I think that Trump revealed the character of some Americans. Sure. He wasn't the catalyst. He's not the person who magically got elected and all of a sudden all these terrible people decided to be terrible. They were terrible to begin with, but they were kind of lurking in the shadows and pretending as if their prejudices didn't exist, pretending as if, you know, their hatred for certain groups of people didn't exist. they exist and they've been existing. And I think that it's important to identify that problem for what it really is. Otherwise, you're not really gonna find solutions. Also, note that this announcement video is all about going after Trump. And I wanna hear what you guys think about that strategy.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of the first part, it's a little bit like, you know, America, like, or like Joe Biden, like, let's get back to when our racism was covert. Just like our wars, covert, you know, like, that, like, you know, like, when our racism was systemic and not, you know, out in the open, not just like classless. For a more tactful racism, I think is what I hear from Joe Biden. I mean, and that's, I mean, that's the thing is like this country founded on a lot of racist principles and a lot of lofty and idealistic, you know, principles and ideas of equality. I do like that he is going after Trump specifically on this topic. And I don't think I've seen a lot of the other 2020 candidates say, this was the moment that stuck out for me. This is when I realized we've got a white supremacist in the office and we have to do something about it. And as W. Kamau Bell says, you know, I think white people need to come get their boy. Come get your boy. And like, to me, this is Joe Biden saying, I'm gonna come get our boy. I mean, he should like implicate himself in that general whiteness.
But. Yeah, I mean, he's gonna have to. You can't come out and launch your candidacy and start going after many of the other people that are running in the primary. Mm-hmm. You wanna, first of all, especially from the point of Joe Biden, who was already the vice president and served under Obama, which of course a lot of Democrats are just gonna see that and be like, that's awesome, I remember. You wanna launch yourself without even saying so to the point of, I'm already the candidate. You're not looking at anyone else now. You know, you wanna catapult yourself and say, I'm that guy who's running against Donald Trump. I'm not running against Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. Sure. Those guys are irrelevant. You already want me. Mm-hmm. So without saying anything detrimental about potential other candidates that people like, you have to put yourself above them. So I think that's the strategy there. You know, and there's the general within the first whole minute and a half of that, a minute of that video, which we got rid of, was the details about Charlottesville and where Charlottesville, the humble roots of history for Charlottesville and what Trump actually did in response to some horrific acts in Charlottesville. So that was, you know, he laid it out. So just to know, in case you haven't seen the whole thing, that's what happened. Then we go to black and white images of MLK, women's rights parades and triumphant war. We're raising the flag again and the Statue of Liberty, all that happens. And then it just makes people feel so American-y.
Yeah, that's okay, so.
American-y.
That's such a good point because I think I'm particularly sensitive to the jingoistic rhetoric regarding America and who we really are, because I think that it completely ignores real issues that we have when it comes to race relations in America. Again, Trump was not the catalyst. We've had issues with race relations and racial tension for a long time, and we've simply pretended as if those racial tensions didn't exist. And when I say we, I don't mean we here at TYT. I mean we as a collective country for a long time pretended as if we had combated that issue and everything was good.
But this is beautiful. This is perfect liberal, like America is at its core good. And I think actually what Trump's presidency is raising up for a lot of people, you know, who maybe didn't have to face it every single day. It's like, actually, maybe at our core, we're not good.
Right.
We need to be good. At our core, actually, we've got a lot of racist value ideas. The ideas that America like was founded on are pretty racist. So maybe we have to construct that. Like, I agree that it's nice that he's sort of forward-looking, but right, when everyone else is running on Medicare for all, climate change, prison, criminal justice reform, minimum wage, all this, like everyone else is running on super concrete things, and he's just like, come here, give me a hug. Okay, that's enough, just that far.
And I think
I've learned my lesson.
I think the appeal for Biden is the nostalgia, right, for some people. I think he represents a period in time where things appear to be calm for a lot of people. And so I think he has that going for him. But he does differentiate himself from the other candidates by immediately attacking Trump, whereas the other candidates, for the most part, are not specifically going after Trump. You're right, they're talking about their policy proposals. But my question is it a smart tactic or strategy for Biden? Because the fact of the matter is, if you recall, in 2016, one of the biggest criticisms toward Hillary was that she was hyper-focused on giving people reasons to vote for her because Trump was so bad, right? Instead of talking about concrete policies, how she would actually make people's lives better.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, look, for someone like Bernie Sanders, who has a strong economic message, I think that it makes sense for him to avoid focusing so much on Trump. He does attack Trump time to time, but his economic message, I think, has this unique ability to unite Americans regardless of their ideology, because regardless of whether you're a Democrat or Republican, progressive, conservative, you're feeling the economic struggles in America, you know? And I think that his message can really resonate with people across the board. You attack Trump, then you start losing some of those people.
Yeah.
And I think that it wouldn't be a good strategy for him. With Biden, look, it's just his first video.
Right.
So who knows? He might roll out some concrete policy proposals. But if he's planning on specifically focusing on attacking Trump, I don't think that's gonna do
it
for
him. Yeah, we've seen some of them. I think he's saving it for later.
Yeah.
You know, to talk about it specifically. But of course, as you said, when it comes to just the first campaign video, it's the, hey, we're going against this guy. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll come with other stuff, but again, he knows that's not the strong suit, especially with appealing to progressives. But we talked about this in the conversation with John and Cenk once about if Biden has a chance, if he gets in, it was 2-3 weeks ago. And obviously now he's in, it works, mm-hmm. it works. Now we're living—
Did it though? I mean, that to me, it's like Biden, cause Clinton worked out so well. Like,
but no one, yeah, not no one. I won't say no one, but Biden seems different than Hillary Clinton, but only because there's still that nostalgia feeling of the last president. Oh, Biden was right there over his shoulder the whole time. Oh, good old Uncle Joe who accidentally cussed in his ear that one time. Like, people still like him, and we're this age group of Democrats / progressives that want something different from our leaders.
Yep.
There is a huge number. There's a reason why before he even jumped in the race, he was leading.
Right.
Because there's a huge number of old school Democrats, old folks in the middle of the country who are like, yeah, man, I'm that Democrat from 1974. I like this guy. He's progressive. They see him as progressive, and there are a lot of them.
Sure.
So as soon as they see his face, they're like, I like that old guy. I don't like that other old guy who's a little wily.
And
I like this old guy who's been saying the things for all the times that I'm used to him saying. He's comfortable to me.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of them.
He's comfortable to me, and I'm comfortable. Like, economically, generally, I think people who are going to vote for Biden and who want Biden are like going to be wealthier and more well off. He's like a regular size Bloomberg, you know?
I'm sorry, one last thing. There's still Democrats who are, you know, Republicans are annoyed by these razzly young progressives who don't know anything about how government works. AOC doesn't even know what the government is, that those stupid things they say.
Yes.
There are Democrats who don't like these young, wily Democrats. Oh, they don't know what they're doing yet. Calm down and just walk. They like people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Like, just walk slowly because we'll get it done. Just calm down. You guys are way too mad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. But it doesn't mean that they want racist policies. It just means they think that's not the way to get there.
Yeah, and I think the difference between Biden and Hillary is, you know, this whole issue of authenticity, because he does come off as authentic, whereas I think Hillary Clinton did have a severe authenticity problem, you know, just to juxtapose the two. So we'll see how this plays out. I'm curious to see what he's gonna bring to the table policy-wise, but we all knew he was gonna announce, and it finally happened. So with that said, let's move on to a different angle to this story. Who supports him? Who does not support him? Now, following Joe Biden's announcement that he intends to run for president in 2020, there were a number of public figures who came out either in support of his, his run, and individuals who, you know, maybe don't like him so much. So let's start off with some of the progressives who think that this is a bad idea, particularly the Justice Democrats. According to The Hill, the progressive group Justice Democrats, which has pushed to challenge sitting Democrats who are not sufficiently progressive, quickly announced their opposition to the bid. So Alexandra Rojas is the head of Justice Democrats. She's the executive director. And I want to read you her statement on this. She says, quote, We can't let so-called centrists like Joe Biden divide the Democratic Party and turn it into the party of no, we can't. Life expectancy has decreased for a third straight year in our country. We need Democrats who will fight racism and inequality with solutions that match the scale of the crisis we're facing, not piecemeal compromises with corporate America and the party of Donald Trump. That was a strong statement. And knowing Justice Democrats, I assumed that they would come out with a strong statement like that. And for a lot of reasons, I agree with what Rojas says, especially when it comes to the need for bold solutions for the very real problems that we have.
Yeah, I mean, back to what we were saying, it's basically, it's a like, we were fine. We were fine up until 2016, mm-hmm. and then Russia interfered, and then we have this president, and he's racist. Like, no, if you don't look at the Trump as a symptom to an illness, right, rather than, except if you see him as the illness, you're wrong. He is a symptom to where America was already headed, which was massive inequality and a whole lot of disillusionment and cynicism around our political system that is increasingly just basted in money, right? We are turkey basted in fossil fuel dollars, in pharmaceutical money. And that's another thing that we have to talk about. It's like, is Joe Biden going to renounce super PAC money? Is he going to renounce pharmaceutical money? All the other things. I don't think so, because Joe Biden's super safe for business. He's not going to be challenging corporations the way Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders are going to be and have. So, I mean, Biden is like, everything's great. Remember when we were fine? We were fine.
Yeah.
We were fine.
Now, I do think, just real quick, mm-hmm. The one thing I disagree on is whether or not he should run. I don't want to dissuade anyone from running. This is a democracy. You have the right to run. He wants to run. Do you, boo, right? And we get to decide as voters who is best suited to run against Trump. I was about to say run against Cenk. Run against Trump. And you know, like, let this play out the way that it's supposed to. But with that said, I do agree with Rojas that, you know, we need bold solutions. So he's got to bring that to the table.
Rojas is speaking to that progressive group, that 20s to 40 maybe year old group of progressives that's like, we're sick of this. I've sat through this many lectures. This is gonna be my first one, depending on where you are in the range. And I want something different because I'm better than this. There's this boldness with this level of progressivism. And we throw stats. We're mm-hmm. like, this is the numbers. Life expectancy, wages, economy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. everything. We hit them
concrete.
With it, right? And that there's the feel of stats, and this is the person that's gonna change it now because we don't have time to wait, versus the people that are like, feel good, we're gonna include everyone. Hey, everyone isn't bad in this country. Not, hey, F those people that keep screwing us up. Get rid of them, bring in new ones. There are these two factions. One is like, we're done with this. The other's like, we can do better if we bring everyone in. And they feel softer. And then this other one feels like hard and angry. And sometimes that feeling turns off the soft ones. So just in this primary, the middle ground is no longer with being a centrist on policy, but has to be with a centrist on how to make sure those feel good people still feel good, but then still believe these stats that we're throwing at you, because nobody likes the nerd. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to learn the class. It's like, ooh, I got the answer. And then tells you, hey, Miss Taylor, I've got this, and gives you all the stats and they're right all the time.
No.
You're like, yeah, you're right, but I don't like you and I don't want to vote for you for student council.
And
it's weird, it's a mix.
And
you have to be
what?
Right,
I mean,
and be.
I think you're really right, JR, with that. And I think the other thing that really scares me is that, and since we're talking about playground tactics and our politics have been reduced to playground tactics, you know who loves to make fun of the nerd? Bullies. Mm-hmm. And who's the bully? Donald effing Trump.
Right.
And so that is what worries me about someone like, I love her policies, but I do get worried about Elizabeth Warren and even Bernie Sanders. If you like, you gotta have zingers. Where are the zingers? Where's the appeal? It can't
it's
only
sad
be
that that's
it can't
true.
Only
yeah.
be wonk. And it's super sad. Yeah. I'm not saying that we shouldn't demand better, but we need, I think some of Biden's like feel good stuff, I think Bernie and Warren and other candidates could use, you know, some even Buttigieg could use, just like relax a little bit.
But Buttigieg is nothing but feel good stuff. I mean, what has Buttigieg brought to the table except for feel good stuff and the fact that he speaks several languages? And look, I'm not hating on Buttigieg. I'm still open minded toward him. I just want to see policy. Yeah. I get it. I get that the majority of Americans are busy and they don't really care as much, right? I'm obsessed with it. I want to know what you're going to bring to the table. You can't talk to me about your values unless you show me what your values are through your policy proposals. Anyway, sorry,
sure.
That's a little bit of a tangent. But I want to get back to some of the people who are supportive of Biden's run and those who are a little more skeptical. Now, Obama is not known for endorsing a primary candidate. He didn't do it the last time around. He's not doing it this time around either. But Katie Hill, who is Obama's spokesperson, said the following. President Obama has long said that selecting Joe Biden as his running mate in 2008 was one of the best decisions he ever made. He relied on the vice president's knowledge, insight, and judgment throughout both campaigns and the entire presidency. The two forged a special bond over the last 10 years and remain close today. So that was it. So it was more, hey, Obama's cool with Biden, but it wasn't, hey, we endorse or Obama endorses Biden over the other Democratic candidates.
Which is smart.
Yeah, I think that was probably the best way to go. Now, there are also some Democrats in Congress, senators specifically, who have been supportive of Biden. Bob Casey is one of those senators. I'm proud to endorse my friend Joe Biden for president. And then he also says, at this make or break moment for the middle class, our children and our workers, America needs Vice President Joe Biden to be the next president or its next president. So it's interesting that he brought up these very real income, you know, inequity issues in America in the context of Joe Biden
and
running.
And the guy to gloss over it all is Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I think Joe Biden belongs as vice president. That's why everyone liked him. He's a perfect vice president. He's that guy you want to hang with, and he's going to read to the kids, and he's going to do a little scary voice when he reads the role of the monster. And then he's going to go to the pancake breakfast, and oh, he can't eat anymore. He's not the guy we need in the White House right now. Sorry.
What Obama, at least his spokesperson, did, just last thing for me at least on this, when she said he had a longstanding, he's long said he selecting Biden as his running mate was the best decisions he ever made, one of the best decisions. So he didn't fully endorse, but he allows supporters of Obama to feel that he endorsed Biden without endorsing him. It's like, everything is awesome. I wouldn't have been me without him. Oh my God, best decision ever. And they go,
Yeah,
but Obama totally wants Biden in the White House.
Sure.
And they'll take that, and Obama can sit back and go, I didn't endorse anybody.
Yeah, I mean, look, I actually paid attention to the conversations happening in cable news about this. And overwhelmingly, the talking point is that Obama didn't endorse him. So that's good because
I don't see it factually because he didn't officially endorse.
That's true. But one other thing is, I mean, Obama's kind of in a difficult place because of course, people are going to want his statement on his vice president running. And so what is he supposed to do?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Like, I don't know, he was all right. You know, like, I think he really does respect and have a friendship and bond with Biden. And I think that his statement was totally okay.
He probably told him, I can't officially endorse you, but I'll say something nice.
Yeah. And then finally, I just want to note that even before Biden announced that he was going to run, you had people like Senator Dianne Feinstein and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo saying that they're supportive of his run. So just full context, all of the people who are backing Biden. And to be fair, he is still doing well in the polls. He's, you know, he and Bernie Sanders, depending on which poll you are looking at, are kind of like neck and neck. All right, so that does it for Biden. When we come back, we have other news for you, including some polling on the Green New Deal, which is fascinating, especially when you consider the negative framing in some of these polls.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Right back. Welcome back to TYT. Francesca Fiorentini and J.R. Jackson join me today. I want to read a few member comments. And one of my favorite is from Buttweed. And he writes it and says,
2020.
Joe will say something stupid. Oh, Joe will say some stupid stuff and be gone. So Joe Biden is known for saying things off the cuff that have gotten him in trouble in the past. So I don't think he'll be gone, but I do agree that he'll probably say something accidentally that he shouldn't say. Anna writes in and says, it seems like Biden can only hurt the Democratic Party versus helping further the conversation about the progressive agenda. Look, I think there's some truth to that, but also we're progressives and we want to push for a progressive agenda. We're not representative of the entire Democratic Party, right? I wish we were. And so he does represent a portion of the Democratic Party that we might disagree on or disagree with on a number of issues.
Who are fairly apolitical.
That's a good way of
putting
it.
And who just want to bet on a winning horse and are like, we just got to get rid of Trump. But they don't understand the way to get rid of Trump is to actually have a bold vision that actually problematizes the reason he's in office in the first place.
Yeah. And look, I want to be honest about something. Look. It's the primaries, and I think the primaries are the most important part of the election because you have an opportunity to choose the right Democratic candidate to run against Trump. And so I'm gonna be a lot more critical during this time, and it's not because I'm trying to destroy one candidate or I'm doing my best to be fair. But at the same time, I will vote for a glass of water over Trump. I will vote for a 9-year-old.
Tall drink of water.
I will vote for anything over Trump, okay? So like I want Trump out. So understand that I'm not trying to like go after the Democratic Party, but I do think it's important to give fair analysis of the candidates, at least, you know, after looking into their policy proposals. I'll do that as soon as Pete Buttigieg offers anything.
And I'm sorry, let's keep it real. I mean, how egotistical would it be if we'd assume, oh, my dismantling of a candidate is taking one out. I'm not controlling millions upon millions of voters. It's not our job.
Right.
When we do it, everyone's in going, oh man, I totally had a change of heart because Anna said something on the Young Turks that one time about the analyst. We'd hope that enough people listen and figure it out for themselves, but nobody's just going, oh, let's wait for them to say what they're gonna say and then I'll totally vote that way. Oh, we'd had anyone we wanted by now. That didn't work last time, did it?
Right.
Yeah. Look, it's my job to talk about the, you know, differences between the candidates, what they have to offer, what they're not offering. And you get to make your decision. If you disagree with my analysis, that's fine. If you disagree with anyone's analysis here at TYT, that's totally fine. We might not agree on some issues, and that's okay. But we need to get back to a place of civility among Democrats so we can get to a better place. Like, we don't have to agree on everything.
Agreed.
Finally, I wanna read a few TYT lives. I'm a Derpy Panda says, yeah, and it's the centrist establishment Democrats that broke said middle class. So basically, their actions have led to the inequity that we're seeing right now when it comes to income and wealth, and I agree with you on that. All right, let me tell you a little bit about Aspiration, though, if you care about progressive financial institutions. Aspiration is a wonderful progressive financial institution. Progressive and financial institution doesn't have to be an oxymoron. It exists, and it's aspiration.com. Now, they will not invest money in dirty corporations, fossil fuel companies and industries. And that is so important, especially considering what's happening to our climate. It's actually a financial institution with a conscience. So go to aspiration.com/TYT. They will not charge you fees if you tell them, hey, I don't want you to charge me fees. And they also donate 10% of their money to charity. So,
very cool.
Yes, aspiration.com/TYT. And since we're talking about, fossil fuels and climate change, why don't we discuss the Green New Deal?
Yes.
Recently, the US Chamber of Commerce, which is not very supportive of the Green New Deal, conducted a poll to see how Americans feel about the Green New Deal. Now, unsurprisingly, the way that their poll was framed was inaccurate, to be honest, and more importantly, was framed in a way to ensure that the results make it appear as if most Americans are not supportive of the Green New Deal. Now, just a quick bit of context before we move on to what the poll indicated. The Green New Deal is not legislation yet. It is a resolution. It is a list of ambitions. And so for anyone who treats it as if it's a policy or it's legislation that's completely figured out and has specifics, they're wrong. So let me get that out of the way. But with that said, here's what we found from this US Chamber of Commerce poll. Based on its survey of 1,000 likely 2020 voters, the chamber touted the deceptive claim that 73% of voters support a cleaner, stronger energy agenda that uses more American energy and continues environmental progress compared to 21% of voters who support the Green New Deal. So the way that it's framed makes it appear as if, would you see, these voters, they actually like what we're currently doing, where we're using fossil fuels, but you know, we're making some progress. But that's not really the way that, an accurate way of framing things. So the cleaner, stronger agenda was identified or defined as America focusing on using its resources responsibly and safely by implementing a cleaner, stronger energy agenda that prioritizes investments in innovation and advanced technology to reduce emissions. Okay,
jeez.
So you get where we're going here, right? The words cleaner and responsibly are not defined. So this survey choice can literally mean whatever the respondent thinks it should mean. So
this feels like that joke that Kimmel did way back when around Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, when it was like, you know, hey, do you support the Affordable Care Act? Yeah, what about Obamacare? No, I hate that. Like, this is the exact same thing. They just punk themselves by doing this. Like, hey, do you want to reduce emissions and have a clean, efficient way to power the nation? Yes. What about the Green New Deal? No.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that. So let me give you some more information on how this poll was conducted. So the Green New Deal was also misrepresented as America focusing on requiring a transition to the Green New Deal's proposal to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions from the US economy in 10 years, regardless of costs. That is not what the Green New Deal says. It's just simply not what the Green New Deal says. To give you more information, the Green New Deal calls for 10-year mobilization, whose ultimate goal is eliminating net greenhouse gas emissions from the economy. The actual target date for getting net zero is not in one decade, but in 3 decades. And again, it's not legislation yet. It is a resolution and a list of ambitions. Now, the chamber survey found that 55% of likely voters support that more ambitious target, and 49% say it is feasible. So even with the framing that they put in there, that was completely flawed, completely slanted in a way to make it appear that Americans don't like the Green New Deal, it appears that, again, 55% of the likely voters do support a more ambitious target. And 49% say that it's feasible to accomplish that target.
It shows how obvious it was that this wasn't a mistake, that they accidentally put the words in the wrong place, and cleaner and stronger and responsible and all those things. They didn't self-destruct. They purposely repositioned where things were so it could fit their agenda. So that wasn't a mistake in the first place. But it also comes to the fact of this pompous approach to your poll. They think so much, oh my God, no one wants anything different than what I want. You're sitting in your bubble, and then you don't want to ask a question that you don't know the answer to yet. And then when you get the wrong answer, you have to find a way to scramble and flip it and change what it really means, because that's a little bit embarrassing. Well, I think it's an attorney thing. We got attorneys coming in next hour. What they said, never ask a question you don't know the answer to, because you don't want to be caught off guard and then have to sit there and fumble and blah, 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 and figure out what to say next. That's exactly what happened, because they thought, there's no way any people don't want anything different. Let me just lie about it. And after lying about it, this super ambitious approach, they're like, oh, crap, people still want this too.
Right. Is this Wilbur Ross's jurisdiction? They still let him do things. Sorry, he is just so droopy. Will be wrong.
He is pretty droopy. That's a good, good observation.
For minimum wage. Ew.
So let's talk about a different poll that was recently done. And this poll was not done by an organization that's trying to undermine the Green New Deal. So done by the National Green Advocacy Project. So admittedly, it comes from a more positive perspective on the Green New Deal. But what they found, and they did interview and poll both Democrats and Republicans, was that 65% of voters, including 41% of Republicans, agreed with the following statement. In the future, we should produce electricity using 100% clean energy sources, such as solar and wind, nuclear, and carbon recapture from fossil fuels.
Oh, wow.
But what's fascinating is that the numbers change once you tie Democrats or progressives to actual legislation or proposals that would combat climate change. So let me give you more details. According to the National Green Advocacy Project poll, only 22% agreed with the statement. Moving toward 100% clean energy sources like solar and wind, nuclear, and carbon recapture from fossil fuels is costly and unnecessary. 14% said that they weren't sure. But here's the thing. When those same likely voters were asked, from what you know, do you support or oppose the Green New Deal? Total opposition was 46%, and it actually exceeded support at 43%. So this is indicative of how powerful conservative media is, because while conservative media has been hyper-focused in demonizing both AOC and the Green New Deal, the mainstream media hasn't done a good job in actually covering what the Green New Deal is. And so there's slanted coverage on it, inaccurate coverage on it. And unfortunately, there aren't, you know, some mainstream or legitimate news organizations combating the misinformation that's out there.
There's literally only one poll you need to run when it's talking about the Green New Deal. Do you want the planet to die? Yes or no? End of story. Mm-hmm. If you say no, then we need a Green New Deal.
They've even got that covered, because then the attack comes to, oh, well, that question is nonsense. There's no such thing as the planet dying. Oh, you crazy liberals think things are going to happen. Oh, you think there's going to be hurricanes all the time that are unprecedented. They lie to you, even though you see it in your face every year.
Yeah.
So the reason why the statements they disagree with, but then they agree with, or they disagree with the Green New Deal is with the constant shrinking of people with money, and then a smaller number of people with money at the top, those statements about, you know, what they may benefit from monetarily from these things only apply to them. Mm-hmm. So regular folks have no idea how this is coming back to them. All they're thinking is, yeah, man, gas is this much. I'm catching this, whatever disease I'm catching from sitting at these types of things. My house is destroyed. It's flooding things. I don't know what to do anymore. That affects normal people. So when they see something like, do you want to change the way we do our energy? They go, yeah, sure, that's awesome, because that affects me. Mm-hmm. When the other side that's actually pushing all the lies is thinking, oh, my bottom line is better
that's
if I continue
point.
On this. Everyone else's bottom line isn't better, so more and more of those people are against it when you hear the statement, but they're still on the right, on the wrong team.
And the right wing is so good at marketing ideas through the lens of everyone's a billionaire, right?
Yeah.
And then Fox viewers are like, yes, I have stock. And I don't want all my golf courses to wash away.
No, it's such a great
even
point.
Even like, actually they're breathing horribly polluted air and drinking, you know, unsafe water.
So when it comes to the fossil fuel industry, understand that they're powerful for a number of different reasons. First of all, they get subsidized by the federal government, which should be condemned by everyone. They don't, even if they weren't causing climate change, which we all know they are, why are they being subsidized by US taxpayer money? That is ridiculous. One other issue is, look, we talk a lot about divesting from industries that are questionable or problematic. And a lot of people who are, you know, putting money in their 401ks or putting money in certain banks don't realize that unwittingly they're investing in these fossil fuel industries, which is why it's so important to know where you're banking. You know, there's a great financial institution that we talk about here at TYT a lot. It's called Aspiration. And Aspiration is a progressive financial organization. They will not invest your money in fossil fuel in companies. They will not put your money in fossil fuel, you know, any type of fossil fuel industry. And that's important for you to know if you care about climate change. Don't empower these industries by investing your money in them. So go to aspiration.com/TYT. I know this is a little bit of a plug, but I genuinely believe in this institution. Make sure that you're working with a financial institution that has some, you know, morals and wants to put your money in the right companies.
I wanted to say one more thing, which is that I think around climate change and around ways that we're protecting ourselves and making the country safer, making us less susceptible to climate chaos, and also stemming fossil fuel emissions is the biggest thing that we need to do a 180 on once hopefully a Democrat comes to power in 2020. The things that have been rolled back under, remember Scott Pruitt, like, and one example of that, and this has always stuck with me, is like hidden in some annual transit report, right? And of the Trump administration is a line that says, well, we don't believe in cutting fossil fuel or cutting emission standards, excuse me, applying emission standards to cars anymore. Why? Because the damage is already done when it comes to CO2 emissions. They admit in this transit report that climate change is real, and that irreparable damage has already happened. And so what's the point of limiting emissions anymore? Because we're all going to die. That is the cynicism that Fox News and this administration sells us on our own death, that we should just laugh in the face of it. And that, I think, annoys me very much so.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't get repeated. It doesn't get talked about, period. Yeah. That they said that.
Yeah, no.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about a pastor who encouraged young parishioners to spit on him and abuse him. Why?
Hot.
We'll give you the reason.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment.
Welcome back to TYT. We were just talking about bidets during the break. Mm-hmm. And now I kind of want to talk about bidets during the postgame show. Yeah. You're not going to be here, unfortunately.
No.
And I don't think you're going to be here either, JR. Are you going to leave right after this?
Why would you think that?
Because you're probably going to leave right after the first hour.
I don't know. Are we going to talk about bidets?
Yes.
He's looking up bidets right now. I totally saw his screen.
Amazon has bidets for like $20, but I feel like that's too cheap.
It's
totally going to be like ice cold or something. It's going to like cause icicles.
First time I used a bidet, I turned it on before I sat down. That was water in my face.
Oh, that's not fun. Let me tell you about Game of Thrones. So Game of Thrones is happening. We all know this. If you don't watch Game of Thrones, I'm sure you're annoyed by everyone else who's talking about Game of Thrones. And you know who else is going to talk about Game of Thrones? TYT. We do Game of Thrones reviews every Sunday right after the show airs. And this week we're going to have Cenk Uygur, Brett Ehrlich, John Iadarola, and Ida Rodriguez reviewing the show. Those pictures are really good with the exception of Cenk's. He looks so annoyed for some reason.
I think they took it from in the middle of a that looks like it's a still in the middle of a rant he was going on.
No, he's
for watching a video about Donald Trump.
And then look at John's like come hither stare. Like, yeah, come join me for a deep dive into smize. Game of Thrones.
I think they're both watching just like a clip right now.
So make sure
Brett's
you check it out.
Watching something burn. He's just like, I did that.
So you can watch live by going to tyt.com/live. But our members get to watch whenever they want because they have access to our archives. Please help support our show. Get this exclusive content. Go to tyt.com/join. And then one other thing for members that I want to mention. Members get all sorts of exclusive content, and some of that content features something known as TMI on TYT. So we have The Conversation, which is in the third hour of the main show. Cenk usually interviews a number of really interesting people, And we do like a deeper dive for our members. So if you're a member, please check out TMI on TYT. And if you are not a member, again, you can go ahead and join by going to tyt.com/Anna. That's one N, tyt.com/Anna. Mm. Or if you hate me, and I know some of you might, go to tyt.com/join. All right, with that said, let's move on to some other news. A pastor or associate pastor in Ohio is facing some criticism after he decided to teach some of the young parishioners about Jesus by encouraging them to spit on him and use a knife to cut him. Now, luckily, he didn't get hurt. I don't know why he thought this was a good idea. And apparently, the church is launching an internal investigation. Jadius Dempsey is the name of the associate pastor at Impact City Church in Ohio. And he claims, look, I was just trying to teach them about what Jesus had to go through for us. But I think you can do that without encouraging young people to physically harm others. Now, one of the young parishioners who's only 12 years old said, he was like, I don't want you to go crazy with it, but I do want you to slice it down my back and make me bleed. Wow. And then she continues to say, Jesus did that for us so we wouldn't have to go through it. And that's the part I don't understand. So she, as a 12-year-old, understands how creepy and weird this is. And luckily, other parents do. So again, there's an internal investigation going on. But with that said, the lead pastor at the church did open up about this incident. And here's what he has to say.
Jadius got up in front of the students and he says, I'm gonna ask you to do something that might seem a little crazy, but if there's anyone here that would like to spit in my face, you can do so without any repercussions. And several of the students took him up on it. Jadius offered, if there's anyone here that would like to slap me, you can do so without any repercussions. Several of the students slapped him. Jadius offered, if there's anyone here that would like to cut me, you can do so without any repercussions. Jadius pulled out a steak knife and one of the students cut him on his back.
So if you're watching,
Jadius likey.
If you're watching the video version of this show, I know some of you podcast, Jadius is the man sitting right behind the lead pastor. And it's weird having the lead pastor talk about what happened as if Jadius is right
third
behind
person,
him.
Right next to
like,
him.
He's like right behind him, looking awkwardly into the camera. And so I wanted to show you what the lead pastor had to say about what actually occurred that day. But he's gonna get into what some of the consequences will be in just a minute. But I wanted you you guys to jump in a little bit and share your thoughts.
Well, okay, so he went through all the things, and we'll get to what our associate pastor had to say of how it went down, I think. So I'll save that part for later because I have some thoughts. But so he went through all of it, and as this was happening in the video, children are laughing. They're like, oh my God, is this real? Like, the discomfort, again, you know, I assume they're all around the same age because they invite kids over after school. This is their whole thing, to hang out, and they give them 5 minutes of, well, I forget the term they use, but our submission of faith or something like that. Our deposit of faith is what they call it into the kids.
Your BDSM of faith.
It's crazy. So you have to start having some kind of recognition of what you sound like.
Jesus
and what
was
you're
a
doing.
Freak, okay?
It's weird.
Jesus was a freak. Let's just get that out of the way. First of all, if my youth pastor, who I knew was full of it at the time, I only lasted couple years. I really just did it to hang out with, you know, boys. Because that's why people do things at age 14. If he was like spit in my face, I'd be like, yes, this is amazing. No repercussions. I can hit you. I can slap my pastor. I've been wanting to do that for so long. I think that this should just, we should institute this. All pastors should be able to be slapped on Easter Sunday.
It's so crazy. This is out of control. I mean,
it happens more than it should.
There's something, I'm just gonna say it. Like, what if this associate pastor gets some sort of sexual gratification from it? There needs to be a real investigation, in my opinion, right? And if not, sorry to interrupt you, if not, you're like encouraging young people to use violence, to carry out some sort of religious lesson. That's crazy.
Yeah, you're only thinking that because a lot of people are thinking that, because this is weird.
Did he call them Jews while they were doing it?
I don't think so.
He was just like, the Jews are killing me. No, listen, I mean, this is the thing with Easter. It's like, yeah, don't do this. Go out and hunt for plastic eggs that a giant rabbit stole from a chicken and then hid in your backyard.
Yeah, yeah, that's the fun stuff. That's I'm in favor of that.
How is that Easter at all?
It's
arguably
not, but I'll take
this
that.
Is a little bit more
why
Easter.
Why is this the kind of teaching that needs to have so much proof? You know, like we talked about Steve King yesterday, representative from Iowa, racist, who said, oh, I'm like Jesus. I get Jesus now because I get how he felt because I went through all this on Easter. It's really weird. Why do you have to put yourself in their place? So there's this weird Jesus complex these guys have, and they want to take his place and they want to feel it.
Does that mean Steve King wants to climb up and be nailed to a cross? Because I'm not saying we wouldn't enjoy that, or we would enjoy that.
What are the ways that we teaching kids that we don't have to prove things to them by cutting someone, spitting in someone's face and slapping them? Hey, kids believe in Santa Claus, but we don't say, hey, so you know what? We're going to get on the roof. And we're going to get in this sleigh and we're going to try and take off like Santa does. They believe it. You don't have to prove it to them by making them cut you, slap you, and spit on you. You're getting something from that. That is not a teaching.
Just yeah. Saying. Let's watch more from the lead pastor.
After Jairus allowed them to spit on him and slap him and cut him, he sat him down and explained to them about this guy named Jesus. We believe that Jesus had the power at any point to stop them, to stop those that were hurting him. But he chose to allow it to happen. He chose to allow them to spit on him and beat him and crucify him in order to take the payment of our debt that we call sin. So Jairus, in an effort to share that message of love through the gospel and the story of Jesus's crucifixion, he shared this illustration and tried to share in some of the pain that Jesus took on that day. Now, although the intent was honorable, it wasn't appropriate for our student gathering today.
How do you know the intent was honorable? You don't know the intent was honorable, right?
I can think of 5,000 different ways you could show that. You could, okay, Thaddeus, just stand there, dude, shirt on, man. Keep your shirt on because you're around children. And like, you know, that's the appropriate thing to do. Then they can just yell at you. They can call you names.
No,
they can.
I don't want any of it though.
But I'm saying, if you believe that Jesus endured all of these horrible things and you want to show that, okay, then you say, I'm going to stand still and you can say names, call me names. I'm going to like walk with a giant, I don't know what, a cross or like, you know, and the fact that I'm not going to respond to you shows you the, you know, Jesus's wherewithal. I'm a horrible Sunday school teacher, but something like that. Wherewithal. His stamina, that's not a good word either.
I just think that you don't need to carry out physical actions to help kids understand the severity of historical events, right? So I mean, we all know what the severity of the Holocaust was. We didn't need our educators to put us into a gas chamber to make us understand that.
True.
And so this is part of the reason why I'm not really buying what his intent was to educate these kids. And look, we're not showing you the video of what happened. NBC News reported it, and we don't have the rights to show you the video, but you watch it and it's just, it comes off as something completely different from what he claims it is. That's just my take. I could be wrong.
What did he have to say? Maybe he was actually heart in the right place. Can we see what he had to say?
Sure, let's watch. Next video.
I am so sorry for misrepresenting the community, the church, the parents, the students, anybody that I hurt is not my intention. My intention was just to show them how much Jesus loved them. And that I love them as a student leader for almost 4 years now. And tonight was an anomaly. It is not normally what happens. And again, I am deeply sorry for the pain that I have caused. So we apologize for the confusion, for the harm, and for any just hurt that we may have caused you or our community that we love so much.
So I just want to note that it is kind of shocking that Macklemore went from his like singing career to being a lead pastor somewhere.
Honestly, and that like Harrison Ford is now an associate pastor, like between the two of them.
Anyway, whole story creeps me out. I don't like it, and I kind of want to
think about it this way. We will, but he said It was what you didn't see at the beginning of the sociopath. He goes, it was my choice alone. I just started doing it. It was off the cuff. You had a steak knife in your pocket that you pulled out and handed to children.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
That was just... Yeah, I like walking
around
with steak
knives
in my pocket.
JR, you never know when a steak is going to appear and then you need a knife.
This is long planned. Maybe it's rare.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You want to make sure you got to cut it before you finish.
Okay, okay. That does it for hour one. Thank you so much for joining me on the panel. Francesca, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Franny Fio. Thanks
for having me.
You can find me here. I will not have a steak knife in my pocket.
Ironically, you usually do have a large knife somewhere around you to cut like the cake you bring in for yourself. That usually I try to eat.
You bring in cake for yourself?
Yeah, all the time.
It's there. I'm going to go eat it now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a new panel. Brooke Thomas and Adrian Lawrence will join me. And you do not want to miss the stories we have prepared for you guys. Come right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.